Today, on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
A lot of the information about the epidemiology of pulmonary fibrosis among veterans has really emerged over the last 5 to 7 years, so there's a lot that we're still actively learning.
Today, Drs. Call and Ed Gunsoye join the podcast to discuss veterans and interstitial lung disease, providing specialized care in rural and underserved areas, in this PureDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative supporters.
Hello, I'm Deji Adegunsoye. I'm an assistant professor of medicine and the scientific director of the Interstitial Lung Disease Program at the University of Chicago. I also serve on the Committee on Clinical Pharmacology and Pharmacogenomics within the Biological Sciences Division and the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine.
And I'm Bhavika Kaul. I'm an assistant professor of pulmonary and critical care medicine and health services research at Baylor College of Medicine. I also serve as a core investigator with the Health Policy, Quality, and Informatics Program at the Center for Innovation in Quality, Effectiveness, and Safety.
Bhavika, thanks for joining me today.
I'm very glad to be here, Deji.
All right, so I'm really pleased to be speaking to you today from CHEST 2025 here in Chicago. I know as a physician scientist within the VA healthcare system that your long-term vision is really to leverage technology and technological innovation and implementation science in a way that ensures that veterans receive exceptional subspecialty care. And you do all of this while optimizing finite healthcare system resources available to you. And so what I'd like to discuss today are some of the topics that you have been and are currently examining within that space. Does that sound good to you?
That sounds great, Deji. Before we get started, I do have one standard disclaimer. Although I work for the VA, I'm not here in an official government capacity, and the views expressed today may or may not represent the views of the Department of Veterans Affairs and the U.S. government.
Got it. So to start off our discussion, I'll ask you this. Can you bring us up to speed on the current epidemiology of pulmonary fibrosis in the veterans population?
Sure, absolutely. And what I'll preface this by saying is that a lot of the information about the epidemiology of pulmonary fibrosis among veterans has really emerged over the last 5 to 7 years. So there's a lot that we're still actively learning. When I think of epidemiology, I think of it in some subcategories. So one is, what is the disease burden? What is the incidence and prevalence of pulmonary fibrosis in the veteran population? The second category that I think of is risk factors. So what are some unique risk factors that veterans may have that may predispose them for pulmonary fibrosis? And then the third bucket that I think about is, how do these patients interface with the healthcare system and how do they utilize our healthcare system? And so what I will say is the work that we've done in our group and others have started to do as well has shown that the incidence and prevalence of pulmonary fibrosis among veterans is one, higher than the civilian population, and two, has been increasing over the last decade. Now, part of this increase may be true increases in the prevalence, but it may also be because we are now more cognizant about this disease process and are increasingly detecting it on things like routine CT scans, say done for lung cancer screening, or potentially because antifibrotics were first approved in 2014, it's possible that once we started having a treatment we could utilize, we were more cognizant about diagnosing patients. So definitely there's been an increase in incidence prevalence, and it's higher than the civilian population. The other things that we've looked at is the risk factors among veterans. Specifically for idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, we know age is a big risk factor. The median age for veterans in our population is in the late 60s, early 70s, so they're predisposed for those reasons. And then increasingly over the last decade, we've started examining the role of exposures, environmental exposures, in disease biology. And so we found that veterans living in rural areas actually have a higher prevalence of idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, potentially because of exposure to things like agricultural dust, wood dust. Those are things we're still trying to work on understanding better. And I know at least when I see patients, oftentimes there's a question about whether there's any military exposures associated with pulmonary fibrosis. And what I say to patients and to veterans is that we really don't know yet. It's an area that we're actively examining and learning more about. And so those are kind of the risk factors that I think of when I think about epidemiology among veterans. And more recently, we've started exploring healthcare utilization, really leveraging the VA's big data and robust electronic health records to better understand that.
Yeah, I mean, you tapped on a few important points that I think are worth calling out again. You talked about the VA population being an at-risk population because of several factors, the aging population, the exposure profiles in these individuals, and of course, several other demographic factors as well. But I know that in your role over at the VA, you actually have some leadership capacity in data governance and in leveraging the resources you have to help us better understand not just the pathophysiologic mechanisms of pulmonary fibrosis, but also how to leverage this information to improve outcomes. So can you tell me a bit more about this work that you're doing over there? How have you used this information, leveraged this data to better understand veterans' access to healthcare in your current role and given the experience you've gone out over the last several years?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe what I'll do is I'll first take a step back and explain a little bit about the data sets that we have in the VA, because I think it's pretty unique and unlike anything that exists in other healthcare systems. So the VA is the largest integrated healthcare system in the US, and it was one of the first, if not the first, to adopt electronic health records. So what this means is in the VA, we have electronic health record data dating back to the 1980s, 1990s, when most other healthcare systems were using paper data. And all of that data is housed in a secure central data repository called the Corporate Data Warehouse. And so anytime a veteran has an interaction with the VA healthcare system, the data from that interaction, that clinic visit, the vital signs, the pulmonary function tests, the imaging, gets stored on the back end in that corporate data repository. What that means is if the launch of that data was in the electronic health records was in the 1980s, 1990s, we have almost 30, 40 years of longitudinal data. And what that means is we can see how these patients over time, and that's the key, over time, interface with the healthcare system. What are their barriers to care? What are potentially some gaps in care? Are we appropriately using our medications that we have? Are we providing guideline concordant care? All of those are really sophisticated healthcare utilization questions that you highlighted that we can actually ask and answer with this sort of robust data set. I will also say that in addition to the electronic health record data, there's a couple other data sets in the VA that we've really spent a lot of time as a system investing in. One of them is the Million Veterans Program, which incorporates genetic data for now a million veterans to answer some of those genetic environmental interface questions that we still have not resolved in our field. There's also increasing interest in exposure registries. So there's several exposure registries that exist where the veterans answer lifestyle questionnaires, their military service questionnaires, and then that becomes also a rich data set as well. And when we're able to link these different data sets across the healthcare system, that's where we can really get to a lot of the sophisticated questions and answering those questions within our ILD community.
That is very impressive. I mean, data that goes back to the 1980s and 1990s, that is undoubtedly a rich resource for actually answering questions that I think provide a robust answer to many of the challenges that we've had in times past, even today, currently in our practice in ILD. One of the points that you mentioned really resonated with me, the fact that you're able with this repository to answer questions about exposures and also genetic underpinnings in patients who are veterans but also have pulmonary fibrosis. And as you know, we think about endotypes where patients who have specific exposure patterns or profiles and those who have specific genetic mechanisms may respond better to different therapies we have in pulmonary fibrosis. And so that brings me to my question specifically, thinking about antifibrotic therapy, which, you know, we just had about 12, 13 years ago for the first time in this space. What have you learned about the utilization of antifibrotic therapy by veterans from your working with the VA system? Specifically, what are some of the factors that contributed to the gaps that you mentioned when you were telling me about this earlier?
Thanks for asking that question, Deji. What we've seen when we've looked at antifibrotic uptake nationally, so this is across the whole VA healthcare system, we found that the antifibrotic utilization rates for patients who, at least by the EHR, have a diagnosis of idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF, is about 17%. That's pretty similar to what has been published when looking at Medicare at a population level. The data quote that is used in Medicare suggests that the population uptake is about 20%. That, as you know, is significantly lower than what we see at our tertiary care referral centers. So a lot of the major academic centers, when they publish on antifibrotic uptake, suggest that it's closer to 70%. So that brings up the question about, is there a difference between the utilization of a lot of these novel therapies at major tertiary care academic centers versus what's actually being done at a population level? And I think that gets to your question about some of the gaps in care and factors that may be contributing to the gaps. I think when we did that work, one of my key takeaways was that what we experience both in care delivery at tertiary care referral centers is not necessarily what's done at a population level. And one of our jobs as ILD pulmonologists is to be able to better disseminate that knowledge, to be able to better partner with community practices, right, in order to ensure that patients, no matter where they are and where they're receiving care, are still able to get access to a lot of these novel therapies. I will highlight that sometimes cost is a barrier to some of these novel therapies, especially these antifibrotic medications. That is not so much of an issue in our VA healthcare system because the benefits and insurance coverage tends to be very good. So even if you take out the piece of the insurance, I think the key gap is that our resources and our medical expertise tend to be concentrated in major cities. But that's not necessarily where the U.S. population lives. They live everywhere. They live in rural areas. And so one of the things that we've really started to think about is there a way through telehealth, through hub and spoke models, that we can better make sure that the care and the resources we have in some of the major cities is able to be dispersed and leveraged for patients who live outside of those catchment areas?
Those are really incredible insights, Bhavika. I would say that based on a lot of what you have published as well, your work in this space, we in the tertiary healthcare system outside of the VA have learned a lot from those nuggets that you just said. And these nuggets are applicable not just in tertiary healthcare systems, but also in the community centers as well. I was going to ask you, based on these insights that you just talked about, what strategies or system-level changes do you envisage might be of value to us in optimizing pulmonary fibrosis care for veterans, but possibly for non-veterans as well? What are your thoughts about this?
Sure, absolutely. Well, what my dream is to be able to launch a hub-spoke model of pulmonary fibrosis care in the VA. So one of the unique things about the VA healthcare system is we can provide care across state lines as long as we do it within our healthcare system. And so what that means is I'm located in Houston, right? But I can support care for veterans who are being seen in Mississippi, in Arkansas, in areas in the South that may not have pulmonary fibrosis centers of excellence. And we can leverage the VA's unified electronic health record system, right? Because I can see all of those patient records. We can form partnerships with those local hospitals, right? Sometimes in the VAs, we call them community-based outpatient clinics. And through a telehealth model where perhaps we would provide a virtual multidisciplinary conference to guide diagnosis and management, we can still reach veterans living outside of those catchment areas. That is something that's definitely one of my personal goals within the VA healthcare system, but I think is a lesson that can be learned even outside the VA, because there are a lot of academic medical centers that are now trying to figure out how do we potentially partner with more rural areas, with potentially clinics outside of our catchment areas, to be able to deliver specifically subspecialty level care to those areas as well.
So just listening to you speak about all the work you've achieved and done at a VA system in Houston makes me want to say we should start saying, Houston, we have a solution, not a problem anymore. Yeah, seriously. But thinking about this,
I need to take that line from you, Deji. I should, you know, I should publicize that.
It works. I mean, you've done phenomenal work in this space. I think we can confidently say so. Please join us for part two of our discussion on veterans and interstitial lung disease.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. You can also download our Amazon Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, what's my flash briefing? Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Call and Ed Gensoye. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.